Good afternoon and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we always say to you, this conversation can include you if you'd like to join us. Our phone lines are open. From Oahu, you can reach us at 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream elsewhere, you can call us at 877-941-3689. Since before the groundbreaking on Honolulu's elevated rail system in 2011, architect Scott Wilson has advocated for an at-grade system. That was 3 years after voters on Oahu approved a charter amendment on rail with a 53% majority. It was also when the projected price tag for rail, according to a University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization report at the time, was said to be in the neighborhood of $5.5 to $6.5 billion. Now Scott Wilson is part of the Salvage the Rail Coalition of Architects and Urban Planners. They've re-energized the conversation about at-grade rail in a report released this year. They say it could transition the rest of the increasingly cost-bloated project and save a lot of money. But do residents, do you, the legislature, and city council have the willingness to retrench? Tonight we sit down with Scott Wilson to hear what he has to say, and we want to hear what you have to say, too. Again, our phone number is 941-3689 from Oahu, and from the neighbor islands or any place else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Scott Wilson, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Beth Ann. And on behalf of Salvage the Rail Committee and campaign, I'm really pleased and honored that you allowed me to come on the show.
Well, we wanted to be able to sit down with you and talk about a lot of the things that we have seen in the media, have been hearing over the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, and to really give an opportunity for people who have a curiosity about what you have been talking about for at least a decade to look at again and see if there really is an appetite for doing this. Mm-hmm. And we really do want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. On the face of it, Scott, you look at this and it says, you know, save $3 to $4 billion, save 5 years of construction, extend the system later a little more easily than the system that we have on the books now, less of an environmental impact, and you're certainly calling for the rejection of the GET surcharge extension, which seems to be the linchpin for all of this.
It really is. We're really concentrating on the cost right now, because that is really the huge dilemma that the legislators are dealing with right now. Is they're caught between sort of a rock and a hard place. They're feeling terrible about extending the GET indefinitely. It's like giving a blank check to HART. And at the same time, they don't want to be seen as obstructionists. They don't want to be seen as, oh, I want to stop rail, you know. So they're really stumped. And what we did with this campaign is to say, before you know, just rush off and extend this GET, let's look at and see if there actually are some alternatives. Because back in May of last year, you know, the FTA talked about a plan B, and they listed 5 or 6 options. They said, plan A, we all know, that's the elevated rail to Ala Moana. But there was plan B. They said you can use a bus, you can use light rail, you could build a guideway only. And they gave about, like I said, 5 or 6 options. And the strange thing was is that somewhere around September last year, some city officials went up to San Francisco, met with FTA, and came back and suddenly changed their tune. They just said, you know what, it's plan A or bust. I'm sorry, you know, We're not looking at any other options. And that's kind of how the mayoral campaign went. Both candidates were saying we got to finish rail. And the poor voters just had no options.
Right now, a lot of people are feeling a sense of fatigue over all of this. Mm. And they've also said, yeah, we wanted to go all the way to Ala Moana. But the wish list and the reality of it is where we're all getting caught.
Mm.
We saw an op-ed a little earlier in the week from Krishnamurti, now the interim head of HART, mm-hmm. and I should say Krishnaya, and he said some things which are, you know, pretty much would you know, put the if it were a gesture, it would be the hand going up saying, stop, no, we're not even going to have this conversation because it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people would think, okay, what he says here must be true. But you say there are some real flaws in what he has said about what it would take to make an at-grade system, including just the size of the trenches that you would need.
I know. I mentioned the trenches to you before our show. That information that Mr. Murthy put in that piece was really old information back from 2009 when the city first tried to stop the light rail movement, and he just recycled some really old information that we discredited long ago, 5 years ago. And that trench issue, which he combined with archaeological findings, he sort of made it sound like, oh my goodness, light rail is going to involve digging up our streets to 7 feet deep, and that's going
to
disturb.
Or 2 to 7, to be
precise. 2 to 7, and 30 feet wide, and we had researched and found national reports about trackway construction in which it was 14 inches deep and 8 feet wide, and we had put that on our website. We had shown pictures of light rail construction in Portland and in Los Angeles with literally 2x12 boards acting as form boards. So if you know what a 2x12 is, that's basically a foot deep. And that was the side of the trackway that was being laid in Portland. So that gives you an idea.
Before we get to some callers, I want to ask you about a few things that he also said about the safety. He used Phoenix's Valley Metro as an example of that it had its first collision in 6 months. I mean, and 20 vehicles were involved with that vehicle-train collisions in the first 6 months. Then he talked about Seattle's at-grade system and other systems involved with this too. And you say no?
I say, of course. There are collisions in cities all over the world. You can get hit by a bus tomorrow, Beth Ann, and nobody's going to write it up in the newspaper and say, oh, my gosh, we got to stop buses. They just kill Beth Ann or somebody else. Sorry to use you. But what I'm saying is that if you look at both of those Phoenix and Seattle systems as examples, oh, yes, they had some collisions when they first started. Of course, in any city, there's multiple opportunities for mishaps and accidents. We all know that. Look at both of those systems. Phoenix is extending their system another 10 miles. Seattle is madly extending their system all the way up to the University of Washington. So
they had some collisions in the beginning that didn't stop them from doing it and extending it.
The benefits far offset these initial collisions.
All right, we've got a caller already on the line. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 from Oahu or 877-941-3689 from anywhere else. Daniel calling us from Waikiki. Aloha, Daniel.
Hi, aloha. Okay, first of all, yes, we would care a lot if Beth Ann was, you know, God forbid, harmed with any sort of transportation.
Thank you.
I apologize for that.
Next thing, and I'm sure you feel the same, okay? Hmm. But one thing is, I think, you know, this organization, Salvage the Rail, is more appropriately named just Abandon the Rails, because I just think, you know, it hurts, it's expensive. However, having said that, there's, I'm sure, lots of public works projects. The Golden Gate Bridge, I'm sure, was just outrageously expensive. They probably, it was over budget, I have no doubt. But it turned out to be a really good thing and for the city of San Francisco. So I think this will turn out the same way eventually. And I think what I would say is that some of these other ideas for transportation, including just, you know, there's bottlenecks in Kalihi. There's a bottleneck at Punahou Street where our freeway is going to two lanes. I mean, solve that. That would be really good. Magnetic levitation, all these other things might be cheaper and better. So in the next leg of rail and the next routes, whatever they are, I think all these ideas should be implemented. I just feel like, you know, people that were just anti rail could have really made, you know, maybe it's not fair to put on them, but they could have really contributed to making rail better instead of just no. So that's my comment. I'll let you respond, however. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Daniel, and thanks for the call. I think it's at this point where, you know, there are people who might be confused about this, that clearly Salvage the Rail is not Don't stop the rail.
Yeah.
And in the very beginning, if we go back and look at some of the things that you and the AIA said in 2009, mm-hmm. clearly in favor of rail, just not the option that was chosen.
Yeah. This position was forced on us. We had advocated for a light rail system from way back in the 1990s. And we were totally agreed that Honolulu is a linear city. It's God-given for mass transit, as one of the foremost authorities has said. He came out in the 70s and said, my goodness, this city is so linear, it's perfect for mass transit. This is Vukan Vucic, who is the foremost authority on rail transit in the United States. So we've always fell in line with his position, and we advocated for light rail. We've just run out of money. The HART has had two different, you know, extensions to its budget. It's gone from $3 billion to $6 billion. Now it's estimated at $10 billion. We're just saying, you know what? At $10 billion is not even going to cover it. It's going to be $15 billion.
We're not even talking about maintenance
it's
yet.
It's mind-boggling because for a city of only 900,000 souls, we are in the stratosphere in terms of per capita costs. And with a tax that goes on forever.
We've got another caller on the line who wants to talk to you. Scott Arby calling us from Honolulu. And if you want to be next, 941-3689 is our number. Aloha, Arby.
Hi, aloha. I just wanted to say that I'm familiar with a number of other places that have light rail. And there's not one city that has not put it in that later says, oh, I wish we didn't do it. They all are happy with it. They all love it. They all realize it was a great idea. And in its initial concept, it is a great idea. The way they've done it here, unfortunately, has not been perfect. It not going to UH or the airport certainly is a serious flaw, but let's not forget the foundation of light rail and the benefit that it is to the people, the elderly, those who don't drive, the infirm, students, people that don't have a car, visitors, all those other people that will benefit as well. I am pro-rail. I will always be pro-rail. Mm-hmm. Let's just get our act together as a city. Aloha.
All right. But before you go, all right. Sorry, Arby.
I'm not sure what he was advocating for because we are certainly pro-rail.
No. I think his point was simply that in other locations where they've had light rail, that they have enjoyed it and that they have not been sorry for it and mm-hmm. leveraging that idea into why don't we have light rail. Now,
May I add? You know, we wrote a report in 2009, and in the back of that, we listed 28 American cities that had light rail. Well, when I went on Wikipedia yesterday to just get an update, it was 38. So 10 more cities had built light rail just since 2009. And these are brand new, and these weren't extensions. These were cities like Milwaukee or Salt Lake City or others that had never even had light rail and had instituted them since we wrote that report in 2009.
Well, we're sort of back in that time frame. Those of us who were here remember that in the election in November of 2008, that there was a charter amendment question: shall the powers, duties, and functions of the city through its director of transportation services include the establishment of a steel wheel on steel rail transit system? Now, there are a lot of people who might be saying, well, hey, we already said yes to that, so we've said yes to rail. But your point is that doesn't at all preclude using light rail instead of having it elevated because it mm-hmm. didn't say elevated.
That was actually one of our chief beefs with the city was when they would take these votes, generalized votes about shall rail be fixed guideway? And the city council and the general public said, yes, we need a fixed guideway. Well, a fixed guideway is a very generic term. It can be a bus lane. It can be up in the air. It can be on the ground. And they went from fixed guideway to elevated rail. And then steel on steel, again, I consider that almost a detail because they were, you know, at that point they already had an elevated guideway and they put in steel tracks versus rubber tires. Okay, so there was a detail there. But I think what we're proposing is steel wheels on steel rails, but they're on the ground
and consistent with what.
Yeah, it's totally consistent.
In terms of a system. Okay, going now to Joy calling us from Aiea. Aloha, Joy. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Yes, I've lived in Hawaii since 2004, and I lived in Portland during the first installation of the light rail in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, people were very upset. They were all saying, you know, we couldn't afford this, and it did. It was a mess in the city. There's no getting around it. But they did manage it pretty well. The thing is that when it was done, it was like an instant hit. And it's so easy. I'm totally an advocate for the ground level, I guess you're calling that grade level rail, mm-hmm. because it's easy to get on and off. It's easy for people with disabilities. It's accessible. It looks good. It's not an eyesore. Honolulu's a beautiful city, and the last thing we need is to not make it as beautiful. So, and also the other thing is maintenance. It's like, because I live in Aiea, I see the elevated rail, and I still don't understand why it looks so expensive, why they've done that. But the other thing is that maintenance. It's like, okay, so people with disability, mm-hmm. when is the elevator or the escalator or whatever they put in there, mm-hmm. when is it going to break down? And I say that because I had to travel once. I'm getting all excited, so I'm losing breath. But I had to travel once in a wheelchair, and I got stuck on a platform because the elevator was out of order, and just nice bystanders ended up carrying me down two flights of stairs. And that kind of thing happens, and you don't have that with grade level. There's less maintenance costs and less, you know, things like that. So I really hope this does go to the grade level. I think it's a total win for Honolulu, and it's easier for people.
Thank you, Joy.
Joy, I wish more people could go to Portland. Obviously, Portland is really the poster child of light rail in the entire country. They have an extremely extensive network, but I just wish more people could travel to the mainland just to get a sense of what we're talking about.
If you'd like to join us, our phone line is open, 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, from any place else, from the neighbor islands, if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Going to Kim calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Kim. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I just got a question. Can you help me understand what the factors are that cause the city to keep going back to this option as opposed to light rail? What keeps pushing us back to the same solution that doesn't seem to make sense?
That's a very long story.
Long, long ago, once upon a time, there was a traffic engineer who graduated from UH in 1972, and he teamed up with a mayor whose initials were FF, and they hatched an idea for a transit system that would be their legacy, and they kept to that original technology from 1972 through 1992. And meanwhile, the rest of the world of light rail changed dramatically, but politicians are inclined to stick with their original decision because they don't want to be accused of flip-flopping. So I apologize. That's a highly opinionated, condensed history, but that, I think, it best explains why we are still working with elevated rail at this point.
You mentioned a little earlier that you've been speaking with legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the linchpin conversation in all of this, because mm-hmm. if the CET isn't extended, then by that very nature, we're going to have to look at something else because there's just not going to be the money.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, have you heard anything back from them in terms of interest in stopping and listening, as opposed to some of the gestures that mm-hmm. may be coming from city council, as we heard yesterday with the tax cap?
Yeah. Again, City Council is really on the edge of this decision right now, Beth Ann. They get a lot of heat and thunder, but really it's all in the legislature because they are the ones that have to authorize the extension of the GET. If we can say to them, wait a minute, this Plan A, this blank check for Plan A rail, there are options. There are alternatives. You are not stuck between a rock and a hard place. There is actually some alternatives. And we're not saying that we have the perfect solution all down to the last detail, but we're trying to lay out a completely feasible option and alternative that they can then say, you know what, we don't need to rush into this GET extension right now. Let's just take a little pause here. Let's just if we just say to the city, no more money. You've already gotten $6.6 billion, and we're not confident that you're going to really even be able to finish this, even at $10 billion. And these other folks have said there's a way to continue the rail, get it into downtown. Then we have all kinds of options. We could do a turnaround at Alapai Street at that bus terminal. We can go on down Kapi'olani and do a turnaround and somewhere on Keamoku, or we can even go on all the way to UH and with the spur to Waikiki. And all with the money that we already have. We don't need any extension of the GET.
As part of the whole conversation about rail this time around in the legislature, there's also a lot of conversation about the 10% surcharge that the state mm-hmm. has been scooping up. UHERO came out with a report of not long ago, a couple days ago, and they're saying that, you know, look, the state has profited, in their words, unnecessarily from the rail project. And they mm-hmm. say that it's time for lawmakers to rethink that administrative fee. And they called it exorbitant.
It is.
When you pack those two things together, is there an argument for lawmakers to really sit down, retrench, and be willing to say, maybe we have to readjust this?
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious that neighbor island legislators had no interest in this GET, probably wouldn't have voted on it in 2 years ago, except, of course, they're getting a nice little skim. And this is free money for the neighbor islands, and it's coming off the backs of the Oahu residents. And it's a bribery. Frankly, it's a bribery. The neighbor island legislators just said, hey, you know, I'm going to take a little of that free money and sprinkle it around my island. I'll vote for it. And
Winning a lot of friends with that remark.
No. I think it was really a dereliction of duty by neighbor island legislators. They just kind of held their nose, took the money, and voted yes. And now even they can't seem to hold their nose and vote yes on 10%. So now the mayor was trying to sweeten the deal with a 25% skim. I mean, it shows the degree of arm twisting that's been going on.
Whereas UHERO was saying that they thought a more reasonable number would be anywhere from 0.5% to 1%.
Right.
So very big difference there. We have lots of callers on the line, lots of people who want to talk to you. We're going to go now to Lena calling us from Kapolei. Aloha, Lena. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I'm a commuter. I live in Kapolei and I work downtown, and I've been watching the rail being built and all the progress that's made, and I'm quite excited. But I'm a little bit disheartened by the article from Scott that came out mm-hmm. regarding going at grade and putting everything on pause. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like stopping something in its tracks and trying to get it going again.
Literally.
That's a very good point, Lena. And we aren't going to stop this because there is a contract out that has 3 more years of building on it between Aloha Stadium and Middle Street. So we, even if this GET extension is rejected, there's still a lot of money in the pipeline, several billion dollars, and there's already a contract out. So we're assuming that all the construction is going to continue for the next 3 years until it comes up to Middle Street. We're just trying to anticipate the problems after Middle Street.
But don't you think that the people building the rail have looked at all these options? And again, I'm in traffic and I drive through Chinatown mm-hmm. and I see what mm-hmm. Hotel Streets looks like. I see mm-hmm. what Beritania, what King Street, what mm-hmm. all those streets look like. And mm-hmm. I see the bike lane on King Street and I see the havoc that creates. mm-hmm. with pedestrians and bicyclists. Mm-hmm. And if we were to put, let's say, as you would, at grade, mm-hmm. what happens there? What about the traffic lights? What about yeah. the buses? What about yeah. the pedestrians? What about the people in wheelchairs?
Well,
it's hard enough to navigate.
Yeah, I agree.
The kind of and Lee, have now, it makes no sense.
I do want to acknowledge Lee Cataluna, who is our sort of our folk wisdom guru, who writes for the Star Advertiser,
who also wrote a piece.
And she wrote a piece just yesterday about, oh yeah, what about the folks walking along and the dogs running into the street and so forth. And I agree, everybody has an initial fear of those things, but it really is no different from putting a bus on a bus lane in our town. And what I really want to say about light rail that's so elegant about it is that it's completely flexible because you can separate directions. You can put them on different streets. You can take one lane out of King Street and one lane out of Barretania and have them go in a loop. You can do turns. You don't need any extra room because these trains can turn on a radius of any big street. And you can put the stations anywhere. You can plunk them down just like a bus stop, and you could shift them. You can and signals can be synchronized. So, you know, all we're asking for is 30 miles per hour because that's really the speed of the train.
And we're going to talk about that for a second. But when she said, you know, didn't everybody look at all these options to begin with? That's a point of view that a lot of people feel like, haven't we been here? Haven't we done this? That's part of the fatigue factor. That seems to be certainly with some of what Lena is saying and mm-hmm. also what others have been saying in terms of, didn't we have agreement on this and shouldn't we just go forward?
I think this is a problem with Hawaii being so isolated. Like I said, the whole beginning of this goes way back to 1972, Frank Fosse. And the trouble is that we don't have things to look over our shoulder and compare with. And so the politicians and the key consultants that were brought in way back in the 90s, they just were allowed to keep their vision and completely ignore all of the changes in technology that were happening on the mainland in the last 30 years. So that is to say we've examined all the other options it was only done very half-heartedly. In fact, there was a major lawsuit that delayed the whole project for a year because it was a legitimate concern that those other options were really not seriously considered. They went with a gold-plated system because it created the most profit and the most kickback.
All right, Lena, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go now to Chris calling us, I think, from Honolulu. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, yes. So I've lived across the country, seen many light rails, 9 times out of 10, over budget, complained about, but like people said, great once it's in. But my question is, can you explain to me why we're not capitalizing on the area that's already been built from Eva to Pearl City to have the automated trains finish that area, have the automated trains running, have money coming in so that it can pay off, start paying off this, or generate revenue to finish it out?
If someone was to write a playbook on how the Honolulu Rail was built, they would probably rank up there with Machiavelli in terms of just evil genius, because the concept of building this rail from out in the countryside into the city is exactly backwards. There's no ridership when you want to go from nowhere to nowhere. And so literally, as our listener is saying, why aren't we running the train from Kapolei to Aloha Stadium, say, for example? Well, because that's basically nowhere to nowhere. And so there's no money in that, and they haven't built the stations either. So
But the point about being able to bring in revenue at all, has there been any sort of cost analysis of even just what that might have done?
No. Many people early on said, why aren't we building this in the center of the city? Start it at UH and run it to downtown so at least we can have a segment running and earning money.
There was also the argument, though, that that would be far more difficult and that the idea was to take the easier route and bring it in. And then once it was committed, then be able to do what you had to do
to
move
politically,
it to
Chinatown. It's a totally a politically driven project. The easy politics of it was build it out in a pumpkin field. Nobody's going to scream out there. So even if it's 30 feet in the air and it's a pumpkin field, the only people screaming are the farmers.
But then there was also the idea that once that was a happening plan, that mm-hmm. there would also be the wraparound services of having, you know, transit-oriented development there
right.
and being able to build it out to something that was already in existence. I mean, in fairness, have you accounted for that too?
Well, yeah, except there's nothing out there. Yeah. I mean, if you go out to the last 10 miles of the project, it's, again, through farmland, it's through Waipahu and Pearl City, but it ends in a vacant wasteland, which eventually will be built, I'm sure. I have no doubt. But this is, again, backwards planning, because normally you build where there are already existing riders. And this is
where you would be able to get the revenue, which is
yeah.
the point that we heard from
mm-hmm.
Chris.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to move on. There are lots of callers on the line if you want to join us. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to John calling us from Volcano.
Wow, Volcano. Sorry, no light rail up there.
Exactly, but I've been a student of this for a long time, and I go to San Francisco. I enjoy the BART. Mm. But one thing that always perplexes me, and it never really gets talked about, is that the last mile question. Even though I love the rail, you know, once you got to get to the station, you get off, then what do you do? Do you have to wait for a bus, or what if you want to go get groceries? So
it's supposed to be limited there. It has to be a multimodal system. Any kind of transit system is multimodal. So I think they're envisioning bus routes to tie in with the different rail stations.
But I don't personally like that. To me, for $5 billion, they could have been creative and thought about. And Oahu is the perfect place to experiment with this.
I think that's why you live in Volcano, John. Yeah.
That you can drive from home, go right onto the light rail, you know, kind of like a souped-up, you know, electric wheelchair scooter, and then get off, go wherever you need to go. You can carry groceries, et cetera.
If I can do another one of my pet peeves, we kept saying we're building a system like Vancouver, except Vancouver goes underground in the center city.
It's a very, very different
system. And that was a convenient detail that was omitted by the city, and so we really took it bad.
All right, John, thanks very much for your question. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. We'll see you. We'll continue the conversation.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele, inviting you to join us this weekend for a live broadcast of our Prairie Home Companion from the famed Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul. Our guests include Lucius, Brad Meldow, and comedian Tom Papa, plus our acting company, Serena Brooks, Sue Scott, Tim Russell, and our sound effects man, Fred Newman, my song of the week, our first call radio players, and more.
Hear a Prairie Home Companion Sunday evening at 6, right after Sinatra.
Tonight on Town Square, we're talking about the project the plan that could save the rail project, at least according to the folks from Salvage the Rail. We have with us tonight architect Scott Wilson, and we are taking your calls. We've heard a lot about the plan to be at grade. You have a chance now to ask your questions. Our number is 941-3689. And we're going to go off to Tommy calling us from Hawaii Kai. Tommy, are there?
Tommy,
are there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We barely can. Make sure you're speaking into your handset.
Oh, I'm driving, so I can't really do that.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
But I wanted to ask you, why can't we just use the bus system as a light rail?
Buses, you know, there are things like managed lanes and bus guideway systems, and Mayor Harris was a very big fan of that, as was Ben Cayetano. And those are extremely efficient, but from a planner's point of view, they don't give the tremendous investment potential that you do with rail. There's something psychological about seeing rails in a street. It's permanent. It's there. It's forever. And we find that property owners along those routes are very motivated to capitalize, improve their project, because they know there's people that are going to be running, driving by, walking by forever. Yeah. You know. So.
Yeah, but the bus system seems like it would be something that is much more practical as far as money is concerned.
Absolutely. And there's always a need for buses. Buses would integrate with this rail system. They will take off from all the different stations, and they will serve all the smaller neighborhoods that you can't run a train to.
All right, Tommy, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Going now to Paul, calling us from Hawaii Island. Aloha, Paul.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I've been here since 88, and I've never seen a project in Hawaii come in on time, on budget. I think the politicians either don't know how to plan and budget for these things, or they get erroneous information, or people raise it. As far as I'm concerned, these politicians, they need to cut the money off if people don't deliver, if they do not deliver the people a product on time and on budget, somebody other than the people need to be held accountable for that, whether it's a contractor or whatever. But that's just my comment, and, I hope things get better in the future.
I think a lot of people would share that thought. Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, that was an excellent comment why are we speaking up now? Why don't we just let this thing run? And as you and I mentioned, Beth Ann, that the trouble is they are just now, after Middle Street, getting into the really difficult part of this project. And if you go and look at the report on our website, we stress that there's colossal problems as they move into the downtown, especially in the harbor area. It has to do with existing buildings, existing foundations, the geological conditions in that fill area of where Nimitz Highway is. That is a nightmare. You can't just bore a hole in the ground and fill it up with concrete like they've been doing out on the Eva Plain. You're going to have to actually rip open the entire street, just 50 feet wide, and pour a huge floating foundation down in the ground.
We're going to move on and take a few more callers. All right, we're going to go now to Jim, calling us from Waikiki. Aloha, Jim. Thank you for
Aloha.
Your patience.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear
us? We can.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
That's better. Better now. Yeah. I appreciate the idea of continuing to look at newest technology, and I wanted to raise a newer technology. I'm a big fan of light rail. I've traveled all over the world and used on-grade light rail everywhere I go, in addition to my bike. So I like it, but I think, I'm wondering if we're really looking at the most recent technology. I called him on a prior program about a company called Skytran, which is passive maglev. That's essentially energy-free maglev, not the superconducting, super expensive maglev people are usually familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth a serious look. It's completely flexible. It can be on grade or elevated. It's extremely low power, which I think I haven't heard that discussed on this program, but the power needs of light rail traditional light rail are not small. We have the whole HECO issue.
There's actually a tremendous amount of electricity needed for rail. But I think I appreciate your interest in these newer technologies, but I think we want to be pragmatic and not really switch horses in the middle of the stream. We really want to salvage this project. We don't want to go back to square one and cause a total redesign of our tracks or our guideway. We plan to use everything that's in the budget, in the contract right now, and the beauty of this dual power proposal that we have is that you even use the same rail cars, but you have an overhead pantograph is what it's called, so that when you get to Middle Street, you stop while you're unloading passengers, and you extend this pantograph up about 5 feet to an overhead power wire, and then you can go down to the street, and you're perfectly safe. So the dual power technology is a newer thing, but it's been used now in many cities, and we think it's...
Where would people know? Where would they have potentially experienced it?
Even in older cities like Boston, subways that are underground are using a third rail power. When they get out into the suburbs, they can't use that because they're on the ground, and they change over to overhead. And we have pictures on our website, salvagetherail.org, pictures of all these existing rail systems in the States that use it, and you show how quickly it just pops up. It's less than 5 seconds to change power modes.
When you talk about changing modes, what about speed? Because one of the things that we've heard for a long time is that it's going to get you into town quicker. You know, you're talking about, 45 minutes or so to be able to get into town. But given the miles, you're talking about, 20 miles or so.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you're going incredibly quickly.
Well, no, but yeah, for the first 15 miles all the way to Middle Street, you are elevated, so there's no change in time. All of those reports on light rail that were done in 2009 came to the conclusion that if you were to run the whole system light rail, it would only be 14 minutes longer. So instead of 44 minutes end-to-end, it was going to be 58 minutes, okay? I'm sorry, 12 minutes longer. It was 56. So three-quarters of this route will be exactly as planned. It's all overhead. So the last quarter, the last 5 miles, would be a grade. So that's 3 minutes longer. So end-to-end, it would be 3 minutes longer. And for that savings, we would be saving $3 to $4 billion.
But in terms of time between stations, if stations are roughly a mile apart—
Right.
You can't be going 60 miles an hour.
This is the point. Yeah. When we talk about elevated rail and say, oh, it's super fast, that's just a pipe dream, because the stations are less than a mile apart, especially in town. So you can't accelerate up to 80 miles an hour and then slam on the brakes. Everybody would be just tossed like puppets all over the car if they were racing. The fact is that this elevated rail system only goes 30 miles an hour as an average speed, 30 to 32 miles an hour. And we're just talking about a loss of 1 or 2 miles per hour when you go down to street level.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Scott Wilson, you can do that now. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We've been talking rail for decades and decades, and for the last 15 years or so talking about this, what we're going to do in Honolulu. And now we've reached this point, which a lot of people find difficult to understand, how we could come to this point with so much in the way of cost overruns and time overruns and just fatigue that's settled in. And yet, based on what we have seen in some of the polling that's been done, people want it finished. You probably want it finished. But how to finish it is the real question. Salvage the Rail says they think they can do it for less money and be able to do a transition to bring it in at grade once it comes into town. We're talking about that tonight with architect Scott Wilson, who represents Salvage the Rail, and he's here to answer your questions. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to go to Bob calling us from, where is he calling us from? From Kapolei. Bob from Kapolei. Aloha, and thanks for your patience.
Hello, Bob.
Hello there. I could start with double barrels loaded as a resident of West Oahu and complain about the people that complain about rail. I can tell you that most of us out here are for it, especially with if anybody that's tried to drive out here during rush hour traffic on a weekday afternoon. There's a meme out there that says, I love you enough to get into westbound traffic at 5 o'clock on H1. because, it's that bad.
It is, yeah.
And it's only going to get worse. All that farmland that you talk about is going to be developed over the next 10 years. And you know, 5 o'clock traffic is going to be noon traffic, and God knows what 5 o'clock traffic will become. Having said that, I'd like to address the idea that you're going to go only 3 miles or only 3 minutes. You're only going to lose 3 minutes when you go to at grade. The benefit of being above ground, to speak to your topic today, is that you're out of the traffic flow. When you go to at grade, you become subject to whatever is happening on the ground in traffic. So if H1 is backed up and Middle Street is backed up and all of that ground traffic is backed up, your at grade rail is backed up. And that's where the real speed increase, in my opinion, and I'm open to being proven wrong, but it seems to me that we need to finish it the way that it's designed, because once you hit town, when the traffic snarls, it snarls to a stop, and that means that your at grade is no better than a bus.
That's a good point. I mean, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, and that's why we totally support the elevated rail all the way to Middle Street, because those are some of the most critical bottlenecked areas, especially in Pearl City and IAEA. And the elevated rail makes perfect sense out there with a very narrow right-of-way and extremely high traffic congestion. However, once you get to Middle Street, you are into the central urban core. You're not at we're not proposing to go on Dillingham or Nimitz or H1. We're proposing to take this thing over to North King, which is a dead-end street. It is not an artery. North King ends at Middle Street. So lo and behold, here's a big street that used to have streetcars on it long ago, back in the 20s, and it has six lanes in many places. It's a commercial corridor, perfect place where you put a lane of light rail on either curb, and you run it into town. And you're really not affecting carrying capacity of the major arteries that bring in people.
So you know, his whole point that it would— You just said that it would bring you to the point where they are in town.
Yeah.
And therefore, they wouldn't be stuck in the same traffic that they're stuck in.
We're not going to try to fight the H1 traffic and all those other major arteries.
There seems to be this idea about, you know, the for rail or against rail. I think we're well past that, and that's certainly not at all what this discussion has been about. But how do you figure out how to go from here is really what everyone has been trying to figure out. And you have a proposal
that
we're talking about.
And we really stress the extension possibility. We all know that we really need an extension to Waikiki. We really need an extension to UH. And these things have been off the table with the city's plan because— A, Waikiki, the hotel people said long ago, no way are we going to allow elevated rail over our dead bodies. So Waikiki was off the table. Then as I was telling to you, Bethann, right now with the elevated rail ending in Kona Street, it is literally driving into a box canyon at 30 feet in which there is no way you can proceed. You are stuck. You are dead in the water at Ala Moana. And to go to UH requires you to back up all the way up to Pensacola Street and build a whole new ramp that goes up and over that huge extension over to Nordstrom's.
We're going to take a few more callers and see what they have to say about the potential of changing this once you come into Middle Street to an at-grade system. Maureen calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Maureen. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Oh, great. So my question was, during the election, that was Charles DeJue's big topic was the rail, the cross the rail, and altering, using light rail or buses. But then there was a delegation that went to Washington, and they came back saying that the government said that the $1.5 billion that was granted towards this rail would be pulled if it didn't go as planned. And that seemed to take the wind out of the sails of the DeJue campaign.
Mm-hmm.
This Save the Rail proposal, would we lose those fundings or would we still get that?
Absolutely. We would get the federal funding because we are bringing rail into downtown. The FTA has modified their stance and cut us a little slack and said, you don't have to go to Ala Moana. If you can just get your rail to downtown, we'll be happy. You get your money.
So and wait a minute. Why during the election wasn't that announced? Because it took a lot away from
I'm not sure you can exactly speak to that question.
I wish I was a fly on the wall in the DeJue campaign because, he was, as you know, he was leading in the polls because he questioned rail. He just questioned it. He didn't have the perfect answer, but suddenly he changed his tune in September and said and came in line with Mayor Caldwell. So he there was really no distinguishing between him and DeJoux.
And the fact now that we still have to produce, you know, a plan to be able to give to the federal government now, do mm-hmm. what in you know later on this year, mm-hmm. this would not affect that.
No, this is a plan. This is a continuing the rail to downtown. As you know, they changed their tune in October and said, if you just go to Aloha Tower, they just kind of picked that out of a map and just said, if you can get your station to Aloha Tower, you've got your money.
Yeah, that's downtown enough.
If it just comes to a crashing halt at Aloha Tower, that's far enough for us.
All right. Thank you, Maureen, for the call. Going to go now, moving to Carl calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Carl. Welcome to Town
Hello.
Square. Hi there.
Thank you so much for your show.
Thank you.
I just want to say the answer. I think we have a engineer over here, Sam Lightning, and he's designed in detail these huge taxis, buses that ride on the freeway over the stalled traffic. They have two little paths on each side. And they drive right over all the stalled cars. The cars will always be that way at rush hour.
Yeah,
this is a Chinese design.
The traffic straddling buses. But
yes,
I appreciate that, but it's a little too off topic, I'm afraid.
All right, we're going to move on. And thanks for your call, Carl. To Amina calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Amina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My biggest question, I feel like it's, I never hear it in the conversations about the rail, is the fact that we're using our car system that we have is so outdated already. I can't help but wonder how much political payout is being received from our politicians by the manufacturer of this type of rail that we're putting in. It's not just the cost alone. It's not just in the rail. The inefficiencies are not just in the planning, but it's like nobody talks about the fact that this, I've grown up in Chicago. I've been here for 11 years. I'm all for rail, but we are we've evolved. The train system, rapid transit has evolved, and we are now using a car that is behind the times. And I know that, you know, we can go in detail about how we're not funding STEM education and how that's leading to our lack of issues here, but this doesn't make sense to me. And I salvaging the rail seems like the starting point would be to use a car that was more modern and more efficient and had the ability.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there and forgive me, but we will talk about those cars on another show. We've done that actually previously, but in terms of looking at this, her whole point is, look, one part of this is not going to solve the whole issue. We know we're a tiny island. There are a lot of people here. Many families have 2, 3, sometimes 4 vehicles. Mm-hmm. And you get everybody out there. We've never really talked about some of the other pieces of this, but we will in future. For the moment now, the question is, should this plan that you and the others from Salvage the Rail have floated, is this something that you know, the public is willing to take another look at, and more so will lawmakers say that they want to as well, if in fact they say, you know, we're going to hold off extending that GET. Mm-hmm. We're going to go now to Eric calling us from Kailua. Aloha, yeah. Eric.
Hi. So my question is, if going to a on-street rail, when I was in Portland, one of the things that was a lot of issues is they had to fix the street-level rails rot because of the way cars would damage the rails, too. And given the quality of some of the streets here in Honolulu, I'm kind of wondering how much more maintenance that's going to require and how much that's going to tie up the roads when they do that.
Okay, we're losing you a bit there, Eric, but the whole issue of maintenance, that's not one that we've talked a lot about. That was not one that was really talked a lot about.
It's a great topic because if anybody's seen our renderings of the elevated stations and the complex equipment that's required in our tropical climate, such as escalators and elevators, as opposed to the utter simplicity of a light rail stop, which is nothing more than a ticket machine and a rain canopy and tracks in the street. The level of maintenance is vastly simpler with light rail.
When you say vastly simpler, can you quantify that in terms of dollars with other systems? Do you have any data to show that, in fact, that vastly simpler, the words have some quantifiable
dollar meaning? Now, this is just operating and maintenance costs. I mean, when you talk about construction costs, you're talking about $400 million a mile versus $100 million a mile. So there's a huge saving. But in terms of operating and maintenance, instead of electricity and painting and security guards and escalators and elevators, you simply have, just a piece of sidewalk. And
no, I think
a
we
canopy.
Know what it is, physically, but in terms of, I guess people have had a lot of dollar amounts thrown at them, and they've seen cost overrun after cost overrun after cost overrun, and to hear terms like this is going to be saving a lot of money, and I know you say it saves $3 to $4 billion in terms of the construction, but the big conversation that we have never really talked about a lot, even though there have been people who are pushing to say, how are we going to maintain this thing?
Right.
What's going to be the mechanism for that?
The estimate is $4.7 million per mile for the elevated rail. The estimate for street-level rail is about $2 million a mile. So there's some extra money.
To build
money.
Or to maintain?
This is just operating and maintaining. Yeah, operating and maintaining. And this is, again, the electricity costs are the same. You have with elevated, you have an automated system, so you have highly paid technicians in a central command center. With light rail, you have drivers in every train. So you have a driver cost, but you don't have any kind of a command center you have to worry about. So there's pluses and minuses. But I think when we talk about maintaining, and it's mainly in electricity, painting, and maintaining equipment, that it all goes away with light rail.
At this point, when we've heard from city councils, we talked about a little earlier today, that they feel they'd like to see this project continue, and that looking at the whole issue of the rail tax cap, and we heard what the budget chair had to say. We've heard from many people who are still in the mode of, look, let's stay the course. Do you feel that you're getting the ears of people who really you need to talk to, or are you really thinking that those ears truly belong at this point, not so much to city council members, but to the legislator that you're walking into and saying, hey, take a look at this?
The legislators are really the ones who deal with taxes. It's not a property tax. This is a general excise tax. And they are really our audience right now, because they will be on their shoulders forever. If they raise this and extend this, they are precluding all kinds of funding and tax possibilities for all the other projects that we have in our state. And they're taking away that option forever if they simply re-up this this Plan A and give a blank check to the rail.
When is your next meeting with them?
We have meetings with Scott Seike and Sylvia Luke next week, and we are getting calls from legislators. They have finally, their ears have been kind of pricked by these savings of $3 to $4 billion, and they recognize that we have some serious budget problems in the state, and that we have some very pressing needs, whether it's schools or state roads, it's sewers, it's liabilities, medical. Funding liabilities. So there's so many things calling for our tax dollars.
We're going to be very interested to hear what happens after that meeting next week. We'll be in touch with you.
Thank you.
To find out. Thanks so much for the time tonight and for answering our callers' questions and for being here with us.
Thank you very much for having me. We urge people to go to salvagetherail.org.
Well, I was just going to tell them that. If you want to find out more, you can go to exactly where Scott Wilson told you, salvagetherail.org. I want to tell you, too, that this is our last show at 5 to 6 o'clock on a Thursday. Next week, we're going to join you at 11 o'clock in the morning following the realignment. So we hope you'll plan to change your calendar and join us at 11 o'clock on Thursday morning. Meanwhile, I'll see you tomorrow morning for The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.